This is the Mother Jones Podcast. I'm Jamila King in Brooklyn. On today's show, did you breathe a big sigh of relief when you flipped your calendar from November to December? Did you think to yourself, at last, the 2020 elections are over? Well, not so fast. For our friends in Georgia, the 2020 elections are very much not over. They're getting bombarded with political ads and national attention because they are about to decide who controls the U.S. Senate and just how much President-elect Biden can get done. Runoff elections like these in Georgia are typically disasters for Democrats, but organizing against voter suppression and high turnout in November are giving Democrats hope. Why this time might be different. Stick around. Ari Berman is a senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights and a friend of the Mother Jones podcast. Ari, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jamila. Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so let's start with a really basic question. What is a runoff and why do they happen and when did they start? I guess that's three questions, but go for it.
Good questions. Basically, Georgia has these election rules that if you don't get a majority of the vote in a general election, so if you didn't get a majority of the vote in November, you go to a runoff where the candidates that got the two most votes will face off, usually a month or so after the election. In this case, it's on January 5th, so about a month and a half after the election. And these runoffs have been going on for a long time in Georgia. But one of the things that really surprised me when I dug into the history here was that runoff elections were instituted in Georgia in 1963, just before the passage of the Voting Rights Act, which led to a huge expansion of Black voters. And the reason why runoffs were instituted in Georgia was because white segregationists wanted to prevent Black voters from electing candidates with the plurality of the vote. And they figured if they moved things to a runoff and required a majority of votes, then the white conservatives that dominated in Georgia would be able to prevent Black candidates or candidates supported by Black voters from being elected. So really, runoff elections dating back to the early 1960s was a strategy by white conservatives in Georgia to try to protect white rule and disenfranchise Black voters. And that history was extremely alarming to me when I read about it.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I ever remember hearing about that in history class. So why are there going to be two runoff elections in Georgia in January? And who are voters picking between? Give us a sense of the characters involved here.
There's going to be two runoff elections for the U.S. Senate. One between David Perdue, who's a sitting senator, Republican senator, and his opponent is John Ossoff, who people may remember ran for the House of Representatives in 2017. Didn't win, but got a lot of attention. He's kind of viewed as this young, up-and-coming Democrat in the state. The other race is for a special election. That's between Kelly Loeffler, who is a Republican that was appointed to that seat by the governor, Brian Kemp. And she is facing Raphael Warnock, who is the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, which is Martin Luther King's church in Atlanta, a church with a long history in the civil rights movement. So there's these two runoff elections. Both of the Republicans are very wounded because they've both done a lot of very sketchy financial dealings. They are both very wealthy, and it looks like they both basically sold off stock in health companies as COVID was rising. So they are wounded candidates. And the question is, can the Democratic candidates, neither of whom are super well known relative to Joe Biden, overcome this history of segregation behind runoff elections? And can they overcome a general trend in Georgia where runoff elections, which usually take place in December or January, so after November, they tend to draw out an electorate that is older, whiter, smaller, and more conservative. And black turnout, for example, tends to go down significantly in runoff elections. And that's why Republicans have won basically every major runoff in Georgia in the last 20 years. And so that's the history and the context that Democrats are facing in Georgia. But they're also emboldened because Joe Biden won that state and Democrats feel like they finally were able to flip Georgia. And now they have a chance to flip two Senate seats as well.
What are the stakes here, Ari? Why should our listeners care about these races?
Well, the stakes are huge. Control of the U.S. Senate is at stake, so it's hard to imagine the stakes being any higher for a Senate race. If the two Democrats win these races, there will be a 50-50 tie in the U.S. Senate that Vice President Kamala Harris can break on tie-breaking votes. Republicans will no longer control the U.S. Senate, and they won't be able to nullify Joe Biden's entire legislative agenda. So really, control of American politics for the next 2 years and beyond is at stake in these races at Georgia. And that's what makes it so much more consequential than your usual runoff election in early January.
You mentioned the insider trading allegations against both Republican candidates, Senators David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. Does it seem like these charges are going to stick?
It's really hard to know. I mean, they are both wounded. The Perdue-Ossoff race was about 1% during the November election. That was closer than I think some Republicans would have liked. And Kelly Loeffler, she has embraced QAnon conspiracy theories. She is the owner of a WNBA team, and all of the players have revolted against her. And so she is very, very unpopular in Georgia. And the question is, Raphael Warnock is very unknown, the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church. Republicans are playing really dirty with him. They're trying to smear him as this crazy left-winger.
Police power, the kind of gangster and thug mentality.
Warnock attacks our police.
Somebody, the same kind of attack as they ran against Obama for associating with Jeremiah Wright, his pastor. Warnock is getting the same kind of Jeremiah Wright treatment from Republicans.
Raphael Warnock, the radical's radical.
Loeffler is clearly very unpopular, but Republicans want to make Warnock as unpopular. And the question is, if all the candidates are dragged down in the mud, will the Democrats lose the moral high ground that they had in 2020? And that will allow the Republicans to squeak through in both races. We don't know, but that's clearly what the Republicans are hoping for.
Let's rewind a few years here. This is a state that faced major voter suppression efforts in the past. In fact, former candidate for governor Stacey Abrams says she didn't win against current Governor Brian Kemp because of it. And she didn't concede in 2018, while she did admit defeat. What happened there?
Georgia was really the epicenter of voter suppression in 2018. Stacey Abrams was running to become the first Black woman governor in U.S. history. And her opponent, Brian Kemp, was both the Secretary of State and a candidate for governor, which was an inherent conflict of interest because he was both the referee and the participant in his own race. And Republicans instituted a whole series of policies that made it harder for Abrams and her coalition to be able to vote, whether that was purging 1.5 million voters from the rolls or putting 50,000 voters on a pending registration list or closing over 200 polling places or rejecting thousands of mail ballots, forcing Black voters to wait up to 5 hours to cast a ballot. These were tactics that likely prevented tens of thousands of Georgians from voting in 2018. They disproportionately harmed voters of color. And there's no doubt they benefited Brian Kemp and hurt Stacey Abrams and prevented that race from going to a runoff. And that was a really searing experience for Democrats, for Black voters. They felt like Abrams was robbed of that race. And they committed themselves to organizing against voter suppression for 2 years. And Stacey, in a very high profile move, formed her own voting rights group called Fair Fight, but there were also other organizations as well. And they really devoted themselves to trying to create the kind of electorate in 2020 that Abrams envisioned in 2018. And that was the electorate that turned out for Joe Biden in November and allowed him to carry the state very surprisingly by 12,000 votes.
It's interesting the tables have turned somewhat. How is what Abrams claims different from what the Republicans are saying is going on right now with election fraud?
Well, I think there's a few differences. Number one, Abrams didn't spend months trying to subvert the results of the election. She didn't concede because it wasn't a fair race, but she acknowledged that Kemp would now be the governor of Georgia, something that Donald Trump has refused to do with Joe Biden. But I think the bigger point is Abrams was making an argument based in facts. There were voters purged from the rolls. There were polling places closed. There were rejected ballots. There were all of these tactics and devices that prevented people, particularly Black voters, from being able to cast a ballot. There is no credible evidence of voter fraud in Georgia or anywhere else. And so the false equivalence that's being made between Stacey Abrams and Donald Trump is really, really, really ridiculous. Abrams had legitimate grievances, which she then worked to solve, to expand voting rights for all Georgians, whereas Donald Trump is trying to subvert the electorate to both lay the groundwork to make it harder to vote, but also to try to raise money, keep his political career alive, and do all of these things that have no basis in actual facts.
Coming up, what's at stake for the incoming Biden administration if Mitch McConnell is still in charge of the Senate come inauguration? Stick around. Hey, it's really easy to support the Mother Jones podcast. We are trying to keep you informed and maybe even a little bit hopeful heading into 2021. All you've got to do to help us out is hit that subscribe button. Thanks. The Mother Jones stories you're hearing right now are brought to you by our listeners and loyal readers who fuel our work. Audience support makes up 2/3 of the Mother Jones budget and helps our team dig deep on stories that matter. Make a donation at motherjones.com/give to keep our nonprofit newsroom humming. Again, that's motherjones.com/give. Welcome back to the show. We're here with Ari Berman, our voting rights reporter and general megastar, talking about Georgia and what's at stake for the incoming Biden administration if Democrats win or lose 2 runoff elections in Georgia on January 5th. Ari, Biden pulled off a win in Georgia. So how did he do it, given this history of voter suppression?
So, I mean, you're right, Jamila. It was incredibly close. Biden won by just under 12,000 votes. And he was able to assemble a very broad coalition. People of color were nearly 40% of all voters, and he won 70% of their votes. So that was obviously key. He improved on Stacey Abrams' margins across Metro Atlanta and brought out a lot of new voters, brought out a lot of young voters, but also was able to flip some moderate white suburbanites who may not be super liberal, but didn't really like Donald Trump. So it wasn't really an either or thing. Biden had to do all of it. He had to persuade some potentially swing voters or even Republican leading voters to vote against Trump, but he also had to bring out a much more diverse electorate. And if you look at the numbers, and I think this is really, really interesting, Asian American turnout increased by 91% in Georgia from 2016 to 2020. Latino turnout grew by 72%. Black turnout grew by 20%, while white turnout grew by just 16%. So Georgia is changing demographically. And this was the first election in which those demographic changes were actually able to have an impact at the electorate, because the barriers that existed in 2018 were lowered in 2020. So you could have higher turnout and you could have more voters of color turn out who might have stayed home or been disenfranchised in 2018.
President Trump is still attacking the election results in Georgia, claiming that they aren't legitimate. What impact is that having in the state?
It's leading to a civil war within the Republican Party. It is really astonishing what is going on within the Republican Party in Georgia. You have the two Republican candidates for Senate calling on the Republican Secretary of State to resign, which is a situation that I don't think I've seen anywhere else in the country. You have pro-Trump voters chanting, "Lock him up," at Brian Kemp.
"I want you to go to the governor's mansion. I want you to circle it. I want you to blow your horns until Brian Kemp comes out and orders a special session of the Georgia legislature. And then he can resign. And then, as far as I'm concerned, lock him up."
So the architect of voter suppression in 2018, the guy who prevented Stacey Abrams from being governor, is now the one that they want to lock up. I mean, that's how far down the rabbit hole we are in Georgia. And Trump is basically saying that the Republican Secretary of State and the Republican governor of the state, both of whom are key Trump allies, in particular Brian Kemp, who's been about the Trumpiest person you can imagine, that they can't be trusted anymore. And that is leading to this big debate within Republican circles about whether or not they should even vote in the runoffs. Because if the election was so rigged in November, why trust it in January? That's an argument that's been made by some Trump-allied lawyers in the state, namely Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell, who are behind these so-called Kraken lawsuits.
"Do not be fooled twice. This is Georgia. We ain't dumb. We're not going to go vote on January 5th in another machine made by China. You're not going to fool Georgians again. If Kelly Loeffler..."
I think in the end that Republicans will turn out. I think they were always going to turn out. And the question is, will Democrats turn out too? Because runoff elections are always about turnout. They always are have a smaller electorate than you do in a general election. And the question is, how much will turnout drop among both groups? And if Democrats are able to have some of their voters drop off, but are able to keep their major coalition, which means keep young voters involved, keep Black voters involved, convince suburbanites that these elections are worth voting for, then I think they have a really good chance regardless of what's happening on the Republican side of the aisle. But I think if you ask people in Georgia, would you rather be the Democratic Party or the Republican Party right now? I think the Democratic Party is in much better shape.
Speaking of turnout, you've interviewed Stacey Abrams multiple times. For our listeners, we are going to link to those shows in the show notes, and you'll be able to find them pretty quickly. Ari, how are Abrams and her allies planning to get voters back to the polls in January?
They're contacting voters constantly. They really haven't stopped. It's not like they took a break in November. What I found really interesting was Abrams' organizers said they're actually recruiting more people and contacting more voters than they were during the general election. So during the general election, they would usually have between 800 or 2,000 volunteers doing these weekends of action where they call and text voters, and they would contact about 1 million voters per week. In the weekend after the election, in the weekend after Georgia was called for Joe Biden, they had 5,700 new volunteers that they trained, and they contacted 1.6 million voters that weekend alone. So the fact that Georgia is now the entire ballgame, the fact that people know that Joe Biden carried the state, that it's not just a long shot, that it's not just a pipe dream, means that there's a lot more energy and activity on the Democratic side of the aisle. Now, it also means there's more activity on the Republican side of the aisle, too. But normally what happens in a runoff is everything kind of shuts down after November. A lot of people just decide that they're done with politics. They don't want to work anymore. And certainly there is some level of that happening in Georgia, but there's a lot less of that happening in Georgia this year than in years past. There's a lot of organizing, a lot of money, a lot of volunteering that's going on for the runoffs this year that wasn't happening in Democratic circles in years past.
Will it be enough?
That's the big question. I mean, I think it'll be enough in the sense that I think these runoffs will be a lot closer than past runoffs. In past years, Republicans basically took it as a given they would win any runoff election, that the electorate was guaranteed to be an electorate where turnout was lower, and that lower turnout benefited Republicans because it brought out an older, whiter, more rural electorate. This year, it's really, really unclear if that's going to happen because Democrats are so much more motivated than they were before, and the Abrams-Biden blueprint worked in November, and it can be replicated in early January. And so I think both races are viewed as a toss-up, and the fact that both races are viewed as a toss-up is a victory as of now for Democrats because these are elections that Republicans should historically and even in the present day be favored in.
Donald Trump staged a rally last weekend in Georgia, which was basically a grievance fest. Some Republicans are now worried he might be suppressing votes from Republicans. How much credence do you put in that?
I don't know, because Trump has kind of shifted his messaging now, saying people should vote for revenge. Now, it's not clear who they want to get revenge on. Do they want to get revenge on the Democrats, or do they want to get revenge on their own governor and secretary of state? So I think Democrats have more coherent messaging right now than Republicans do, because Democrats are saying these Republicans are too extreme. They don't represent Georgia anymore. Georgia is changing, and we need people that reflect the diversity and values of our state, whereas Republicans are in the middle of a civil war. And so it's not really clear what the Republicans believe. And even at that rally that Trump did, he spent most of his time complaining about voter fraud and attacking Republican officials, and then sort of read a script saying, vote for these Republican candidates. So he doesn't seem excited at all about the runoffs. I think that the Republican base will be motivated to turn out because they know that control of the U.S. Senate is at stake. Mitch McConnell and others are pouring a tremendous amount of money into the state to attack John Ossoff and in particular Raphael Warnock. I would not be surprised at all if it was in the end a split decision. If David Perdue, who's a sitting senator, defeated John Ossoff narrowly, but also if Raphael Warnock, who's a fresh face on the scene, defeated Kelly Loeffler, who has a lot of baggage. And then we would be looking at a 51-49 Senate where Republicans would still be in control, but they would have one less vote. And then the Susan Collins of the world, the Mitt Romneys of the world, the few remaining, the Lisa Murkowskis, the few remaining moderate or sensible Republicans would really be able to control the balance of the U.S. Senate. And that wouldn't be great for Joe Biden because Mitch McConnell would be in control of the Senate, but only having to peel off one vote if he wanted to get a judge confirmed or pass legislation, for example, is a lot more doable than having to try to get two votes.
And finally, what's at stake for Biden's presidency here? What are the biggest ticket items he can get done right away if Democrats control the Senate? And where will he be blocked if they don't?
If Democrats don't win both of these races in Georgia, Mitch McConnell is still going to be in control of the U.S. Senate during Joe Biden's presidency, meaning that Mitch McConnell can block basically everything. He can try to block Biden's entire cabinet. He can try to block any sort of major legislation, whether it's on the economy or on healthcare or on voting rights or judges. All of those things, Mitch McConnell will be in control of what does and does not get done in the U.S. Senate. If Democrats win these two races, Mitch McConnell is no longer Senate Majority Leader, which means Democrats control the agenda. It will be a very, very narrow majority. It will be a 50-50 majority that Kamala Harris will have to break ties. And so they're not going to get every sort of progressive wish list done, but they'll be able to confirm Biden's cabinet. They'll be able to pass legislation that has bipartisan support, such as stimulus relief. They'll be able to confirm judges with 51 votes. All of that is extremely important. And so really, it's not an overstatement to say that the fate of Biden's presidency rests on these two runoff elections in Georgia, and that if Democrats win them, it'll make it so much easier for Biden's agenda to get passed.
Ari Berman, thank you so much for joining the podcast. As always, you are the go-to expert when it comes to voting rights. Thanks so much.
Hey, Jamila, thanks so much for having me back.
I'm Molly Schwartz, a digital media fellow in the New York City office. Right now, I'm working on a story about the racial disparities in child protective services. Here are the credits for today's show. Theme music for the Mother Jones podcast was composed by Micah Barrick at Hear Film. This week's show was produced by me, Molly Schwartz, and James West, our executive producer. Mixing and mastering was by Mark Kalinowski, our managing producer, and James West, with additional production work by Jamila King. And as always, credit where credit is due. Mother Jones is supported by you, our listeners and readers, so thanks.
That's it this week for the Mother Jones podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. As always, make sure to subscribe. I'm your host, Jamila King. See you next week. This podcast is brought to you by Mother Jones listeners like you who donate to keep our newsroom buzzing. Help us stay on the beat. Go to motherjones.com/give.